Welcome back to the Code 1098 True Crime Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This case takes us to the East Coast, to New York. Disappearance of a 23-year-old woman on March 1st, 2010 marked the beginning of a crucial and long overdue investigation into the violent deaths of numerous women and possibly some men in and around Long Island, New York, spanning several decades. Despite not locating the missing young woman by December 2010, law enforcement had found other victims. These victims would ultimately lead police to a suspect who had evaded authorities in New York for many, many years. There are more than 15 suspected victims of this serial killer. The earliest known suspected victim was February 1st, 1982. 19-year-old Tina Foglia had hitchhiked to a popular rock concert venue to meet up with a friend who was performing in a band that night. It was confirmed that Tina made it to the venue. Reports indicate that she may have last been seen walking along the highway away from the venue. A couple days later, on February 3rd, highway workers discovered her remains. Tina had been found dismembered and her body was found in three large plastic bags on the roadside. Notably, a diamond ring that she always wore was missing. The police did find male DNA on Tina's body, but never had anything to compare it to. In 1996, on Fire Island, New York, authorities discovered a plastic bag that contained the dismembered feet and legs of a woman. This victim came to be referred to as Fire Island Jane Doe. Fast forward to April 2011. During the ongoing search triggered by the disappearance of Shannon Gilbert the year before, police uncovered a skull. The newly discovered skull was matched to the remains of Fire Island Jane Doe, who was eventually identified as Karen Vergata. Karen had gone missing on July 14, 1996, at the age of 34. On June 28, 1997, the torso of a young woman was found in a Rubbermaid container, indicating she had likely been murdered no more than 3 days before being found. Notably, the torso bore a tattoo on the right breast of a bitten peach with juice dripping from it. Among the remains was also located a red towel and a floral pillow sham. Dubbed Peaches by the police, the victim's identity remains unknown to this day. Fast forward to December 13, 2011, additional remains were found and matched to Peaches, although her skull remains missing. Peaches was estimated to be between 16 and 30 years old. Additionally, among the remains discovered in 2010 was the body of a toddler girl. She would come to be identified through DNA as the daughter of Peaches. Both Peaches and her daughter were wearing similar jewelry at the time they were found. The toddler, the youngest victim in the case, was estimated to be 18 to 24 months old. Investigators were led to a tattoo artist in Connecticut who remembered tattooing a young black woman, approximately 18 or 19 years old, who was accompanied by an aunt and cousin, and that she stated she was from the Bronx or Long Island. On August 7, 1999, 16-year-old Jacqueline Smith disappeared from Brooklyn, New York while walking to a friend's house. She wasn't reported missing until 5 days later on August 12th. Nearly a year after that, on June 20th, 2000, near Rockaway Beach, her torso was found in a plastic bag wrapped with tape. No other remains were ever found. On November 19, 2000, in Manorville, New York, the torso of a woman was discovered by hikers in the Long Island Pine Barrens, earning her the moniker Manorville Jane Doe. The torso had been cut into pieces and placed into plastic bags. Over a decade later, on April 4, 2011, the skull, hands, and a right foot were found in a plastic bag. They were identified as belonging to Manorville Jane Doe. She was eventually identified as Valerie Mack, who also went by the alias Melissa Taylor. Valerie was 24 years old when she was last seen alive by her family in the spring or summer of 2000 in New Jersey. She was never reported missing. Valerie had been living in Philadelphia and, like the previous victims, was known to work as an escort. A few days later, on November 23rd, the body of a male was found by hunters in the Manorville Woods. He was naked and only wearing underwear. He had been strangled and bound in the same manner as Valerie Mack and Jessica Taylor when they were found. The body was found approximately 5 miles away from the location where Valerie Mack was located. It is unknown whether this male victim was ever identified and if he is considered a possible victim of the same killer. On December 17, 2002, a partial human torso was discovered in a plastic bag in Moriches on Long Island. Accompanying the torso was a skirt, bodysuit, and tank top. Subsequently, on January 5, 2003, a severed head was found on the shoreline of a frozen pond near Montauk Highway, displaying a single bullet wound. Then on April 10, 2004, severed arms and legs were found in a plastic bag near a recently constructed house located 3/4 of a mile from the Forge River. All these remains were identified as belonging to a man named Andre Isaac. Andre was known professionally as a talented female impersonator and competed under the stage name Sugar Bear. He was last seen by his roommate just before Thanksgiving 2002 when he departed to meet a special friend who picked him up in a red BMW. Jessica Taylor, age 20, was last seen in July 2003. Soon after her disappearance, on July 26, 2003, most of her remains were discovered in Manorville. Further remains were found on March 29, 2011. Jessica's killer not only dismembered her body, but also attempted to remove a tattoo from her leg by carving it off. Sadly, her hands were never recovered. Just like the others, Jessica worked as an escort. In a similar fashion as the first male John Doe victim found not far from the same location as Valerie Mack in 2000, a mushroom hunter found the remains of another John Doe in the Manorville Woods. He was too scared to report it and waited 10 days to alert authorities to the location of the remains. It was estimated that the victim had been deceased for 1 to 4 months prior to being found. This victim had been bound in the same manner as Valerie Mack, the other John Doe, and Jessica Taylor. It is not known whether this male was ever identified and if he is considered to be murdered by the same killer as the other three victims. On March 3, 2007, authorities discovered a dismembered torso bearing multiple stab wounds concealed within a suitcase. Investigations revealed the victim to be a woman, distinguished by a tattoo depicting twin cherries adorning her right breast. Alongside the torso, the suitcase contained a red camisole, purple sweatpants, a blue bra, and a tan long sleeve blouse. This Jane Doe was referred to as Cherries by the police. It was estimated that she had been slain approximately 2 weeks prior. Subsequently, on March 21st, 2007, one leg was found, followed by the discovery of another leg the next day. DNA analysis confirmed the match between the legs and the torso. Despite exhaustive efforts, Cherries remains unidentified to this day. She is believed to be of Hispanic or light-skinned African-American descent, age between 35 and 50. Notably, although her tattoo resembled that of the previous victim, the tattoo artist responsible for the earlier work pertaining to Peaches did not administer Cherries' tattoo. Both victims suffered a similar fate, being killed and dismembered in a comparable manner. On July 9, 2007, Maureen Brainard Barnes, age 25, was last heard from after she called her friend. Maureen worked as an escort. On July, 3 years later, on December 13, 2010, her remains were discovered on Gilgo Beach encased in a burlap sack, indicating she had been strangled. Maureen frequently traveled from her residence in Connecticut to meet clients in Manhattan. 3 days before she made what would be her last phone call, Maureen took a train from Connecticut to Manhattan. She regularly did this for work, staying a few days at a time to meet with clients and then return to her home in Connecticut. Following her disappearance, a male individual contacted one of her friends, alleging that she was working at a brothel in Queens. The last known activity from her cell phone was recorded near Fire Island in the weeks following her vanishing. Tanya Rush, a 39-year-old African-American woman who lived in Brooklyn, vanished on June 23, 2008. She left her apartment and had told her sister-in-law she was going to meet a friend. Tragically, 4 days later, on June 27, 2008, her dismembered remains were discovered within a suitcase on the South Newbridge exit ramp that leads to the westbound Southern State Parkway in Nassau County. Despite her daughter's immediate efforts to file a missing persons report, her concerns were not taken seriously because Tanya worked as an escort. At 24 years old, Melissa Barthelemy vanished on July 12, 2009, only to have her remains discovered on December 11, 2010. She had been strangled and her body discarded in a camouflage burlap sack at Gilgo Beach. She was the first victim found. Melissa was reported missing by her mother on July 18th. When questioned about her disappearance, her boyfriend slash pimp told police that Melissa went out the night she disappeared to meet a client that she had seen the night before. In the weeks following her disappearance, Melissa's younger sister received multiple haunting phone calls from her cell phone from a man confessing to her murder. It is believed that the man is the murderer. The calls were traced back to Manhattan, Freeport, Massapequa, and Lindenhurst. Notably, her voicemail was last accessed from Massapequa, New York, on the day she went missing. Like the other victims, Melissa was an escort who advertised on multiple platforms and sites. Shannon Gilbert, whose disappearance kicked off the investigation into this whole case. Shannon worked as an escort and went missing on May 1st, 2010, after being with a client at his Oak Beach residence. According to police, Shannon began acting strange, and her client, Joseph Brewer, asked the driver that brought her and remained at the location to take Shannon and leave. She refused to get in the vehicle and leave, but eventually she did leave on foot. She knocked on several doors in the neighborhood, and at some point she dialed 911 and hysterically told the operator that she was being chased or someone was trying to get her. It is believed that she fled from the Oak Beach area towards Gilgo Beach, where she was discovered nearly a year later. Initially deemed an accidental drowning, a subsequent private autopsy suggests Shannon may have been strangled and her throat punctured, either of which could have been her actual cause of death. If the latter scenario is considered, her murder would partially align with the manner of death of the four other women from the same time frame. At 22 years old, Megan Waterman vanished on June 6, 2010. Tragically, her remains, along with others, were found on Gilgo Beach on December 13, 2010. At 1 a.m. on the day she disappeared, Megan called her pimp and told him she was going to a convenience store. Apparently, he had went back to Maine without her. Megan's mother reported her missing to authorities in Maine 2 days later on June 8th. Her pimp was cleared of any suspected involvement in her death. Amber Castillo, age 27, disappeared on September 2, 2010. Mirroring the fate of others, her body was found in a camouflage burlap sack on Ocean Parkway near Gilgo Beach, indicating she had been strangled. Amber, who also engaged in sex work, was reportedly offered an amount of money she couldn't refuse, even though this client had given her issues in the past. Despite her initial reluctance, she eventually ends up agreeing to see him again. On the day she was last seen, Amber left home to meet that client. Amber and her roommates had problems with drug addiction. They also shared a cell phone, which explains why she likely left home without one. Amber's roommate, Dave, gave a statement to the police about his client. His statement included information about the man's physical appearance, claiming he looked like an ogre, and provided a vehicle description. He told police about a previous encounter at their home where this client was being aggressive and scared Amber to the point where she screamed. After hearing her scream, the roommate and her then boyfriend confronted him and tried to make him leave. There was a physical altercation that spilled from inside the home, over the front porch, and into the front yard. The man did eventually leave. Police handling the case at the time did absolutely nothing with the information. Nearly 12 years later, after a task force was formed, the statement was uncovered and investigators used information to further narrow their search for a suspect. Police began putting their focus on a specific neighborhood in Massapequa, New York, based on cell phone records from one of the victim's last ping locations and her voicemail last being accessed from the same location. Once investigators found the overlooked information provided by Amber Castillo's roommate, they were able to further zero in on a suspect. From there, police were able to seek out the DNA samples that ultimately led to an arrest. On July 23, 2023, Rex Howerman was apprehended and indicted only for the homicides of Marlissa Bartholomew, Amber Castillo, and Megan Waterman. Investigators used DNA evidence gathered from a discarded pizza box and cell phone data linked to Howerman. Additionally, an empty energy drink left behind by Howerman's daughter provided DNA reference material. Hairs recovered from the victims were matched to Howerman's wife, although she was exonerated due to being out of the country at the time of the killings, as were both of their children. Furthermore, that overlooked witness statement from Amber Castillo's roommate described a vehicle consistent with Howerman's. Who is Rex Howerman? Rex was raised among three older sisters and a younger brother. His father, an aerospace engineer with a passion for woodworking, passed away when Rex was just 12 years old. Accounts from those who knew him during his upbringing suggest he was deeply attached to his mother, often prioritizing her needs over social engagements or sports activities, citing, "I have to get back to mom." Described as a loner, Rex reportedly endured bullying in his youth. But as he physically outgrew his peers, the dynamic shifted to one of fear, with many wary of his temper, known to escalate when provoked. Rex went on to college after graduating high school in 1982. He eventually obtained a degree in architecture, after which he went on to start working for an architectural firm owned by Harvey Rothenberg in 1987. He got married in 1990 to his first wife. That marriage was short-lived as he was divorced by 1991. He started his own firm a few years later in 1994. During this time, Rex also purchased his family's home in Massapequa, New York. Rex went on to marry a different woman with a special needs son in 1996. And have a daughter with her in 1998. They remain married, although she filed for divorce shortly after his arrest in July of 2023. An avid hunter, Rex often boasted about his collection of over 250 weapons and was known to frequently invite colleagues to join him for hunting trips or shooting excursions. Former employees recall his affinity for guns, with one noting his enthusiasm for bear hunting. How he would relish in describing the process of baiting and gutting and dressing his game, seemingly delighting in the discomfort of the others hearing it. There were instances where he humorously referred to approaching clients as a target in sight. Police claim he regularly used the services of escorts. Ongoing investigations have revealed Howerman's ties to other areas of New York and other states, including North Carolina, South Carolina, and Nevada, prompting authorities to explore potential connections, though none have been disclosed thus far. Recently, Howerman has also been charged with the murder of a fourth victim, Maureen Brainard Barnes. It has been confirmed that almost every victim has worked as an escort in and around New York. Since the arrest of Howerman, multiple escorts have come forward to say he was a client of theirs. He obviously frequented escorts and had a certain favored appearance in his choices, but he only murdered some of them. What did those victims have that the others didn't, that made his psycho feel compelled to not only murder them, but dismember and dispose of their bodies in such a violent way? Many parts of this case were fumbled from the very beginning. The corruption that was eventually exposed definitely hindered law enforcement's efforts to advance the investigation. Even though the corruption itself wasn't directly related to this case, it no doubt caused the lack of anything to happen with it. There are several other potential missing persons that have some of the earmarked traits of all the victims talked about today, both in New York and other states, but they have not been included in much of the information released by authorities. Some people speculate this is the work of multiple killers. Others believe Howerman is responsible for all of these deaths and more. What do you think? Is it the work of a single deranged man who has been free to execute his twisted desires and murder freely for several decades? Or do you believe there are multiple psychos running around New York City for the last several decades? Jump in the comments and let me know your thoughts on this case. Thank you for listening to Code 1098. Be sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode.